Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah, can you feel it? That NOLA vibe. We're getting ready. Welcome everyone to This Week in Health Innovation, brought to you by the Health Innovation Broadcast Consortium, also known as HIBC-TV. I'm your co-host, Greg Masters, and joining me today in the virtual booth is my partner and co-conspirator, Dr. Pat Salber, publisher of The Doctor Weighs In and CEO and co-founder of Health Tech Hatch, a crowdfunding platform in the healthcare space. And joining us today, we're pleased to have a very special guest. We're going to chat with Matthew Holt, known to many in the health innovation space. Matt is the founder of the healthcare blog, and with Indusabaya, he runs the Health 2.0 conference, which is the leading showcase of innovative healthcare technologies. With over 20 years in healthcare and healthcare IT as a generalist forecaster and strategist, Matt's worked for renowned forecasting and polling organizations, conducted several groundbreaking in-depth studies about many aspects of healthcare, and delivered keynote addresses as well. And that's understated, because Matt Holt is the MC extraordinaire and a virtual presence pretty much across the horizon of the conversations around healthcare innovation and transformation. So, Matt, welcome to the broadcast.
Boy, Greg, my head is swelling after that. I sound like I'm almost important.
Well, we are.
I cut these down.
Well,
don't ask how my forecast from 10 years ago panned out. I've now started using them in my talks, explaining how forecasting is impossible, because they were all wrong.
Well, join the club.
Yeah, sure.
There's a long list. I remember the infamous prediction by Sanford Bernstein that by the millennium there would be no nonprofit hospitals anymore. They'd all be gobbled up in proprietary health systems.
Well, they're right. They just don't call them proprietary anymore.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Did you see in the Stephen Brill piece that got hacked around, and now in Time after being shopped around, that MD Anderson's profit rate was over 25%.
Yeah,
but not bad.
Yeah, right.
First, we call it surplus of revenues.
Surplus revenue. Did I say profit? Shocking. All to be reinvested for the good of the community.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we are privileged to have you today, Matt, and Pat's joined me as riding shotgun, and we are doing these broadcasts under this banner of the Countdown to HIMSS. So we're getting ready for this big NOLA bash, and we thought we would just kick around what's on your radar, where you're targeting spending your time, what's piqued your interest perhaps, and whether you have anything you want to just share in terms of what you're going to be doing in New Orleans.
Well, I actually just came back from New Orleans, where I celebrated the 49ers winning the Super Bowl, at least in my reality, when they hit that fourth down pass and scored a touchdown with a few seconds left to go. But I had a great time. Other than that one particular play, I had a great time. I've always had great times when you've gone to the HIMSS in New Orleans, even though it probably isn't actually able to host something the size of HIMSS anymore, because they don't have enough people left after Katrina and all the rest of that stuff. But nonetheless, good time will be definitely had by all. So that's the most important thing. Everyone going to celebrating, Health IT's moment in the sun. You know that we have a moment in the sun now when there are actual official articles on the front page of the New York Times saying how the whole thing was a taxpayer boondoggle and it's a waste of money, and the doctors not only don't like EMRs, they probably shouldn't be using them, right? So we've established that Health IT is about to jump the shark, and HIMSS, the 38,000 people or whatever from HIMSS will be a demonstration of the fact.
Well,
we're going back to paper?
If you read the New York Times article, apparently we'd all be better off backing paper. I don't know. There were some people, some of us, who disagreed a little bit. I tweeted that I was. I think my tweet was something along the lines of I'm shocked that the New York Times only took 4 years to discover the 2009 High Tech Act. They got there 4 years later. There was a stimulus bill and they contained stuff in health IT. And my word, there were going to be health IT companies that were going to make money out of it. Shocked to find that the goal of a stimulus bill to increase the rate of economic activity, which actually did it, is then discovered as increasing economic activity. And some of this economic activity, people were getting rich. I'm just amazed. How could that have happened in America? All right.
So no. So that's legitimate. That's out there. You know.
I mean,
and as you're talking, I'm going to the Gartner cycle of hype, expectations, and so forth. So I mean, that's legitimate.
So
out there.
Hey, so what I'm interested. So there's a legitimate debate, two things, right? One is, this a waste of taxpayer money? And the answer is, it depends. Compared to whatever we were spending a week in Iraq, no. Right?
Well,
right. It's actually something that needs to be done. You can argue all you like, but healthcare, I mean, like Pat said, back to paper, healthcare on paper with no coordination of, messaging and information systems between people involved and no connection from patients into the system electronically like they do with everything else in the world. We should not be going back to that. No, I'm, unequivocal. Whether or not the stimulus bill was the right way to get there, who knows? But I got to tell you, every other country which did this, which got to EMR use by its primary care docs and got there a long, long time before we did, that includes the Netherlands, Norway, the UK, New Zealand, a bunch of other countries beginning with N, and some others, right, got there by having basically a law saying you will use this and by having the government pay for it. So I don't know why we should be so different, especially if the government pays for healthcare anyway here, or at least pays for 60, 50, 60% of it, depending on how you count. So put that to one side. There is a legit, so that's not a legitimate question. And, whether or not U.S. politics is a boondoggle with people making money out of lobbying. I mean, yeah, it is. I mean, but I'm sort of, okay, well worth pointing it out, but in some ways, so what? The interesting question is those twofold, right? One is the thing that's been brought up by another recent article by Scott Silverstein, about Scott Silverstein, and I've had some back and forth with him about whether, this IT is what he calls bad IT, and whether some of the policies around not so much the policies, but some of the market actions and the market, and the proprietary policies by some of the big vendors are actually, hurting rather than helping. And he's particularly critical of things, which I'm critical of too, like gag clauses. On the ability for people to complain publicly about features that are buggy, and of the actions of some vendors, Cerner and Epic among them, for going after people, connected to the hospitals who've been even doing things like post screenshots. There was just an example of this on HIF Talk about somebody posting screenshots of Epic to complain about something, and Epic insisting it got taken down, and threatening the hospital who the doctor was connected with. So, that's not in the spirit of our world of open transparency and sort of the health and web 2.0 of showing, of allowing the community to comment on things and using the wisdom of the crowd to improve. And we know that, the main software tools that are being put into these big enterprises are big old style enterprise software that looks to the rest of the world like, 1995, not 2013. Put that to one side. The other issue is how quickly, forgetting the good or bad behavior of the vendors and, whether or not this stuff is as publicly safe as it should be and whether or not it's safer than paper, which I do think it is. I do think it's had improvements over paper by a long way. The other question, which I'm really interested in, of course, from my selfish business standpoint, is how fast is the enterprise, that is hospitals, taking up the software as a service, cloud-based tools, which is the world that the rest of us live in the world, obviously, that I live in, the Health 2.0, and how fast is that getting into the main enterprise? Because if you think about the software as a service, cloud-based, mobile, big data, all that stuff that we talk about at Health 2.0 and that we think is the future and the way that technology should evolve, and it tends to be more user-friendly and more driven by the crowd and more driven by faster releases and has better usability and better use of data. How fast is that stuff coming into the hospital, because it certainly is dominating in the areas where there is, you know, it's sort of dominating in the areas where there was no IT before, which is primarily on the consumer side and on the small practice side. You're seeing, you know, a lot of players that get featured with Health 2.0 all the time, you know, showing new tools for that. And they're kind of hitting a brick wall when they get to the enterprise. And the question is that wall, you know, we've seen the holes in the wall. We've started to see the cloud-based stuff flow into the enterprise. And there are a couple of encouraging signs. But to me, that's the most interesting bit about seeing HIMSS. And funnily enough, HIMSS itself as an organization is trying to, like, make outreaches to that world. They now have a venture fair. They have this thing called HIMSS X.0, which whether or not it's the truth, so Anish Chopra, when he was CTO, told me that they put that together because he was criticizing them for not being like Health 2.0, so we'll see. But nonetheless,
yeah.
Late at night and whatever.
There you go.
Fair enough, right? There's a lot of innovation activity going on out there, and not much of it was showing up in the big enterprise systems that dominated HIMSS. And, you know, it was around the edges of the HIMSS show floor. And it's coming in conferences like Health 2.0, and, you know, you're starting to see others pick up on it. TEDMED is going to have this innovation hive, and you've got all the incubators, you know, the Blueprint Health and HealthBox and Rock Health and Tiger Labs and a bunch of others like them now. So you know, you're starting to see a lot of stuff going on that's not kind of in that big centralized IT world. It's out of the edges, and that's where you expect to see innovation, right?
Matt, can you tell us, you said there were a couple of hopeful signs that maybe there are going to be some breakthroughs on the enterprise side. Is that something you can share with us?
I you've got to look for signs, right? So there are two that I've picked up on lately. One is that one of the major complaints about the market leader, which is Epic, and I don't want to besmirch what Epic's done, right? Because go to your favorite healthcare organization of mine too, Pat, which is Kaiser Permanente. They put in Epic a long time ago now, right? So starting, yeah, you know, four, and, you know, basically it's been a 10-year thing, but for the last 5 years it's been done, and they've used the my way or the highway approach to their doctors and clinicians to use the EMR. They haven't sort of given the, you know, they've spent a huge amount of time, effort, and money putting it into work, right? And now they're actually showing that tool and doing separate data and analytics on it, and then using tools like Archimedes and others, they've actually made some big changes and improved health outcomes and the way they treat their population. So I think we'd all agree that they've had a big success, and that's an organization that all three of us know well. Could not have been done without using what, you know, was the state of art of IT at the time, right? And they, don't forget, they themselves have pushed along Epic and their competitors a long way, and now Epic is reaping the benefits by taking that, you know, by basically selling it to every other big integrated system. What is not in Epic, though, is easy hooks into Epic for other technologies. It's still, you know, I've had my little 50 cuffs with Carl Forchak and others at Epic about this. It's still pretty much, you know, enterprise software. We build the next add-on, and, you know, we may integrate with other things, but it's still pretty much the story that it's not a build a platform and let other people develop on the platform, which, by the way, is where some of their competitors, notably Allscripts, is now starting to go. Now, Allscripts has gone there because they've not done so well in the marketplace, but nonetheless, I think it's an interesting trend. So that's kind of one interesting move. In the contract with partners, which I understand, so I hope I'm not getting this wrong, but I've been told two things about this contract by people who should know better than I do. I haven't seen the contract myself, of course, but one is that instead of being $500 million, it's over $1 billion. The second payment to Epic, so whether that's true or not, I don't know, but what a great sale by Judy and her team. The second is that the partners got the rights for other third-party companies, especially around clinical decision support, to build directly into the system. So they basically have got Epic to provide sort of hooks, you know, essentially what also would be called hooks into their APIs for third-party clinical decision support vendors. So if that's true, that's a kind of, you know, that's a bit of a change from what we've seen previously, and means that, you know, a big client is going to impose on its vendor and make sure that they are allowed to use what they regard as state-of-the-art tools to do clinical decision support, whatever that means. So that's one hopeful trend. If we're going to put these what are being called battleships in place, and there was a meeting at Harvard from the SMART group, which is this is Ken Mandel and Isaac Cohan's group, where it was really described as we have these battleships, which are big enterprises, you know, with these big IT systems, with Epic, Cerner, McKesson, Siemens, you know, Allscripts, Eclipsis, whatever. And then we're going to put frigates around them. Maybe it's tugboats. I don't know what it is, but which connect then to the outside world and you know, and be speedier and be able to keep it. So maybe we're assembling a battleship that can actually work with its frigate. So that's one hopeful sign. The second hopeful sign is at the other end of the market. I'm seeing now a couple of players. One is outside the country. We had a guy called Gautam Day, who runs ICT Health, which is about as boring a name as you can imagine. But he's running the back-end system that runs Dr. Debbie Shetty's hospitals in Bangalore. It's a group of 30 hospitals, and he runs the equivalent of a full, you know, electronic medical record facing out to all the doctors on, you know, a software and service platform for 30 hospitals in a way that, you know, at a price before in the US, we'll see. So he's actually, I think, believed going to be a HIMSS and getting that certified for meaningful use in the US. We'll see how that plays out, but that's one thing that's interesting. The other thing is another example. There's a company called Razor Insights, which is a bunch of old McKesson guys, headed up by an old pharmacist, not an old pharmacist, but a pharmacist from McKesson. And they basically, when they saw the meaningful use stuff, they realized that there was a bunch of really small hospitals, the critical access hospitals, who were left out in the cold. They had a bunch of vendors like CPSI and Health Plan, who were primarily financial-only vendors. And these guys said so Grazer Insights said these small hospitals have got not much in terms of places to go, and yet they could make money out of meaningful use too. They could be getting meaningful use payment too. So they basically went to a bunch of these small hospitals and said, we will bring you a fully cloud-based clinical system that will qualify for meaningful use. So all you have to do is hand over your meaningful use checks when you get it, and we won't charge you any more than that. And Razor Insights, I think, is in about 25 small hospitals now. And not only have they built the clinical system that works with those small guys, but they've also now unseated a bunch of these old world client server accounting systems, because they built their own accounting system and it fits with their clinical system. And why would you want to bother with the old world, you know, client server system and building Kuji interface if you're a small hospital? So there's a couple of, it's really early days. There's a couple of thousands of these small hospitals. Because you think about it, this is exactly the Clay Christensen innovation disruption pattern, right? This is you start with the small people who have no money, and you figure out something that works for them, and then you go upscale. So they, Razor Insights, with a team in India, wrote this entire system in about a year and a half, and it's all brand new. And I've seen it, and it looks very, you know, my problem with this stuff is I'm not a clinician end user, so I don't know if it's as good as they tell me it is, but it looks pretty neat to me, and it does, you know, 95% of the job that you need at a very, very decent cost. It's not hard for them to build up from there. So to me, you're going to see players like that start to come into the lower end of the market. And after a while, the people who've got these other systems that are thinking about, do we need to spend, you know, $1 billion or several hundred million or even tens of millions, do we need to do that? We're going to have another question, because software or software service or whatever you want to call it should not be something that you're taking out a bond to build like a building that's going to last for 50 years, because it's not going to last for 50 years. And yet that's what's going on, right? When someone's putting in a several hundred million dollar system, they're financing it over a long, long time. So I think that we're at an interesting time. And I saw interesting article just this week from the guys at Axel Exchange saying, and they literally said, is Epic AOL in 1993, you know, looking good now, but only a few more years in the sun before it gets bypassed. So.
Yeah. I saw that. I commented on that too. That's a good question.
But the interesting thing, Matt, so this idea that
And that, just to be fair, I don't think that's the case, because when you've invested so much and it's so slow to change, you've got, you know, it's more like, is Epic, you know, is Epic the Excel or the Microsoft Office? You know?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, well, scale does not guarantee long-term viability necessarily.
Matt?
Yeah, sorry.
My question is, do you think the fact that Epic is going to allow, I forgot what group you said, to have hooks into their system, do you think that this battleship can actually transform itself into something more nimble in time to fight off these new competitors?
I mean, at the moment, right? So at the moment, if you're Epic, you're not too worried. I mean, you don't have to worry about fighting off these new competitors, because what do they say? They don't have a sales department, and they just they turn down clients, you know, for that position, which very few businesses are in. What I think may happen, though, is that they may become they may not get replaced. I don't think they'll get replaced. They may become the base for a more open, usable system in time. So I think it's not, you know, whereas it's unlike, you know, if they stayed completely closed, very hard for people to interface with, then it's more likely for them to be, I mean, it's probably a better just for them to go down that path slowly. But again, you know, they are the AOL, it's AOL in 1993, not 1999 or 2003 now. It's, you know, they're still in a prime market position because they're delivering what appears to be the system that's going to work for inpatient and outpatient to these integrated systems, and we say, here, think that's what they're going to do. So, you know, whether or not it's Jonathan Bush, you know, can be in the New York Times claiming it's the Sonny von Bülow healthcare. Mm-hmm.
Nate De Niro from Open Affairs Television. I'm piping in now. I'm trying to inject a word here, but I think that's very astute observation, Matthew, that the marketplace is going to push the industry towards a more open approach. It's happened in all kinds of other industries. It's just that healthcare, IT is certainly behind in that regard, other industries, I would say. I mean, would you agree with that?
Oh, and it always has been, and there are good reasons for it, right? So list them off. Number one, if you screw up in healthcare, you don't get a business, you go get another government subsidy. Borders. If you're Borders and you don't react, you know, appropriately when somebody comes on Amazon.com, you do go out of business, right? It's a big difference, right? So, but government funded and government regulated. Your government regulated for 100%, your government funded for 60%, and the private funders in general copy the government, with the exception of having, you know, the exception of the charge master billing for the uninsured, who paid more, that we just came up in that time piece. You know, that's fast change. When you do get to change, you have to educate a very difficult professional workforce, whether they be actually your employees or whether they be your travel agents who admit patients to you, otherwise known as doctors, right? And they are professionals who are not easy to deal with. If you are, you know, and dealing with them in a way, dealing for clinicians is hard, and you have to be prepared to take some big steps that many people are prepared to take. So I sat in a meeting about personal health records and EMRs at Claremont County University in 2005, I think it was, maybe 6. And there were a whole bunch of people in the room who were former Kaiser doctors, former permanent doctors, who basically were whining about how miserably hard it was to adapt to the EMR and how they left because they couldn't. And in other words, you know, they'd been told my way or the highway. And George Albertson took his my way, right? Not that many people in America are prepared to do that, especially when you're a hospital and most of your revenue depends on getting those doctors to admit to you. Now more and more of them are buying the doctor practices, so it takes a long time. The third issue is that the payers, the purchasers still don't understand what they're buying, and don't have a very good making the actual people doing the decisions, the patients and the doctors, to make decisions that make sense for them. And it's still, you know, the whole transparency around pricing and value for money is, you know, we're still at the dark ages of that. So there's a good bunch of reasons why it's so much harder in other industries and why it takes longer. But yeah, I mean, in the end, we can't keep spending, well, we can keep spending $3 trillion a year, but we can't spend $4 or $5. The economy is, you know, really not going anywhere.
I mean, wouldn't you say, though, that the past 3 or 4 years, though, have been really interesting in terms of how fast the industry is learning, though, as the technology is being adopted and things are changing and we have these regulatory pressures and incentives? I mean, it seems like the accelerated the pace of learning has been accelerated.
I'd say no question. You know, we're speeding up to where I'm teasing a bit, but we're certainly speeding up to where the UK was in 2006 or 7 when it
couldn't resist, huh?
They did pay for performance, primary care. They had all the things that you're going to track in terms of ACOs, like patient satisfaction, but also, you know, will your diabetics get their foot exams and their eye exams? They track all that stuff and they pay them all on it. And if you watch his articles when he spent time in the UK, you know, he was really intrigued as to how the small primary care groups would have these sort of, you know, meetings all about population health for their area and all that kind of good stuff. All the stuff that we commented, you don't actually see much going on out there in the world. Obviously, we're starting to see people get the incentives and the technology in place, right? You've got, what is it John Lampkin said the other day, like 60% of Beth Israel Dickiness, his patients are now under some kind of capitated contract. You know, the life is a bit different, but we're still a long way away from the change is coming. No question. We're in the middle of the whole thing now. We got, you know, we have the government money. We have a moment in the sun in terms of IT, but that's a long way to go before the system, you know.
Hmm. Is that did he mean a PMPM type cap, or was he talking about just fixed payment?
I'm pretty sure he was talking about capitation PMPM for what, I don't know, but I assume they have enough primary care docs for the whole enchilada. Mm-hmm. But I wave around this chart, Greg. I don't know if you guys have seen it. When I give non-health 2.0 talks, because I usually talk about health 2.0, but when I give a longer talk, I have a bunch of stuff that I give out from my, don't I give out, but I show from my forecasting years, and it's literally like old reports I photocopied and scanned because the technology they were built in doesn't exist anymore because Microsoft put it out of business. So one of the charts I show has got, it's a 1997 survey of doctors about how they got paid. And 1997, as you guys remember, was like the height of managed care, right? It was, everyone's going to manage care, it's all great, it's going to take over the world. And at that time, I think the numbers are something like 35% of doctors were being, 35% of their revenues for the doctor, the 100,000 doctors we surveyed or whatever, came in as quote-unquote managed care. The rest of it was still fee-for-service or was just like, ooh, discounted fee-for-service. Do we have to shut up? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so we're 90 seconds out, but we actually can go overtime if we want to. It'll archive in its entirety. The live portion will cut off at 10:30, though.
The end of the story is that of the 30%, only about 10% was full capitation back then. And then since then, you know, so a very small amount of the market was in full capitation, basically Kaiser and a few others. And we've got, right? And now we're slowly coming back the other way, but it's taking a while.
So I'm going to just cue in the music here for a wind down of the live portion of the show. And if you can, Matt, let's continue on maybe another 5 or so minutes and circle back to HIMSS. And I want to throw a question out to you on Glenn Tolman, because that's been a development since the last Health 2.0 in San Francisco. And I want to get your thoughts on that. So we've been speaking with Matthew Hope. He is the publisher of the Healthcare Blog and is the co-founder and co-executive producer of the Health 2.0 Conference.
the leading showcase of innovative technologies in healthcare, and we are talking about HIMSS Countdown. So I want to say thank you to our guests. It's Greg Masters signing off for the live portion of the show. Join us next tomorrow for Jane Saracen Khan on This Week in Health Innovation.
Now Adam took a bite out of the apples one day, and the juice came running.
Okay, and we're back, Matt.
Cool.
We have Jane on tomorrow. So we have. Okay, we're having a little audio issue here with the my Blog Talk Radio switchboard. Yes, Jane's on tomorrow. We're going to actually be broadcasting daily, 10 a.m. Pacific time through Friday of this week, and then we resume on Sunday in New Orleans at 10 a.m. Central Time, a daily preview of the HIMSS schedule. So you've mentioned the Venture Fair. You mentioned HITXO. Anything else top of mind for you in New Orleans?
Well, I mean, I spend a lot of time wandering around the whole thing, who's doing what, and trying to get a flavor from people who are selling the stuff, you know, what they're hearing from their customers, and then talking to some of their customers. So, I think Eric Turples, if you haven't seen Eric Turples give one of his keynotes, I've got to know him over the last couple of years, you know, back to San Diego chunk there, Greg, and he's a really interesting guy. I think his Creative Destruction of Medicine thesis is interesting. It may be a bit slower than he would like, but I mean, definitely worth seeing his keynote. Bill Clinton, always worth seeing. Glad they could afford him. That's where they're going, the $150,000 it takes to get Bill on board. All good stuff. So, watching that, but I'm mostly interested in meeting with people and like I said, seeing how the world is, you know, the world is changing and the reaction of the big guys to the new technologies.
So in the EHR Derby, Epic obviously is at the front of the class. No sales department says a lot about who they are and their market share. But one of the names always included in, you know, who's going to make the cut has been Allscripts. And Glenn Tolman had sort of an abrupt exit from Allscripts a while back. I'm just wondering, do you have any thoughts about what that means for Allscripts? And have you stayed in touch with Glenn?
So I've talked to Lee Shapiro a bit. His president is also in the, you know, he and Glenn have been running it for a while. And look, you know, so Glenn was really naked about his ambitions, right? He said there's going to be, and he said this to me several times, there's going to be 4 to 5 to 6 big health IT companies left. We're going to get rid of, you know, having thousands in the room, and we're going to be one, right? And so when he started, Allscripts was like a drug dispensing in tiny thing. It got wrapped up in the dot-com boom, got a high stock price, but then their stock price collapsed and the dot-com bust. And he managed to keep the whole thing together, and he managed to. He reminded me of those guys who, you know, hear these stories about a guy starts off with a cheese grater and trades it for something else and keeps trading, eventually comes out with a Rolls Royce. Seeing a combination of financial engineering, his own business acumen, and figuring out what was hot in the market, managed to keep growing Allscripts that way, right? Now, the final thing was when he said, we need to have a big inpatient system. The only available one really was Eclipsis, and he merged it with Eclipsis. And that, you know, making a bet that they would actually be able to unseat a few contracts from Epic and Cerner and McKesson and others and not being as successful as they would like to have been, right? And the problem is when you're a big publicly traded company, if you don't keep growing, if you have a really bad quarter like they did have, you make a bad bet, no one has patience to sort of let you sit around for 3 years and fix it. So I think, frankly, most Allscripts, you know, knockers are sort of underplaying the job that Glenn did. I think he did something, you know, really interesting. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that you then bring with you all the stuff that you bought. And so they're trying to, like, you know, they're trying to consolidate their product lines and close down My Way and with all the stuff. And yet they get, of course you get angry customers because you can never, you know, you can't tell your sales team that the thing they're selling this week is the thing you're going to close down next. But then, of course, when the sales team has told the customer, yeah, this is going to be really, really certified, you're going to get grumpy customers. That stuff happens, right? But I hate to say it, that's how technology, that's how businesses get built, right? You can't all be Google and start one beautiful thing from scratch and just, you know, flare up. In most other businesses, you get that kind of growth, or you get growth by acquisition, and then you have to rationalize the product lines, and it tends to be a bit of a mess. And if you don't manage it well, you end up kind of where McKesson has been on the health IT front, which, you know, the kind of basically not much changed since when they did the deal with HBOC more than a decade and a half. So, anyway, my sense is that Glenn had a phase out, and it's probably gone now, and I hear he's now doing something solar power. Lee Shapiro is going to be around a little bit more, but they have a new team. And I would say, in all scripts' favor, and this is purely self-interested because they're running a challenge with us at HuffPlan doing this right now, closed. They have said, okay, it's time for us to open the kimono and, like, you know, put the lines out from the battleship or whatever the analogy you want to use is, and to allow other people to really easily hook into their tools and build on top of it and build an ecosystem. And, you know, there is some sorting out of the platform to do, but they have a really aggressive internal technology group who's building new stuff. They have a lot of work going on with other people who are building hooks into it. And, you know, I think they're making a very reasonable bet compared to where they are. Not that it's going to be easy for the new management team to figure it out. And obviously, it's not been the best of years for them. Sure.
Right, right. So the beat goes on. Well, I'm Pat. Do you have any sort of final questions or comments for Matt?
Well, I actually have a ton of questions. I'm thinking we'll have to have Matt come back so we can ask some of those questions because we are already over time. And to tee it up, one of the things I'd really be interested in talking to you about on another segment, Matt, would be our neighborhood EHR practice fusion.
I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about them anymore. I get into much trouble. Anyway, that's another. very, very interesting. Very interesting company, put it that way. By the way, voted by Michelle Snyder's latest survey as the most likely Health 2.0 type company to go for more than $1 billion. So we'll see. Ryan will be even more powerful and tricky to deal with if that's the case. Are you guys going to tell me what I'm doing next week on the TV? I'm lost. It sounds really exciting. I didn't know it was called the HID TV network. It sounds really exciting. Can I ask you guys what you're doing? I know we're running out of time, but.
Well, so, Greg, do we do this on air, or should we?
We can preview it. We've come together with what we're calling an independent media effort. We're titling it the Health Innovation Broadcast Consortium, and it's a lot of the names that you've come to know over the last couple years in the social media space. Pat, the Doctor Weighs In, ACO Watch, Open Affairs Television, and we're trying to crowdfund it through Health Tech Catch and MedStarter. We pulled together a prospectus, and our programming is a little bit fluid, but we've got pretty much most of those things on the board. And one of the things we've teed up for you, Matt, is the 2.0 lens on HIMSS, and then a conversation with Ben Choder of Haptique on this whole certification of mHealth apps. That'd be kind of a deep dive. So we'll get back to you and do this piece offline, but that's sort of a general representation of what we have going, and we're thrilled that you're able to make some time available for it.
I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, all these initiatives in this effort, you guys are really pushing the envelope, and it's really exciting to see as it develops. So I'm looking forward to doing whatever small part I can to help you push it along.
Wonderful. So with that, we will get the NOLA vibe going here again. And once again, I want to thank Matthew Hope for his time today. I want to thank my co-host and co-conspirator, Pat Salver, as well as Nate DeNiro from Open Affairs Television. We are doing this daily this week on health innovation up to the HIMSS 2013 conference in New Orleans. We begin programming on Sunday, March the 3rd, from HIMSS. And we hope you will be joining us. We'll preview our activities on a daily basis. So we will draw to close today's edition of This Week in Health Innovation. Greg Masters saying bye now and see you in NOLA.
Took a bite out of the apples one day, and the juice came running out. That's when you and I and everybody found out what love was all about. Come see about me. Come see about me. Come see about me. I ate up the apple tree. One day, under the old apple tree, the apples looked so good to me, I ate up the whole darn tree. Come see about me. Come see about me. Come see about me. I ate up the apple tree. Now Adam took a bite out of the apple one day, and the juice came running out. That's when you and I and everybody found out what love was all about. Come see about me.